AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. The grain markets are trying to confirm that downside corrections do come in three-day clusters, and there are solid price gains in the livestock markets as well. We're still trying to figure out why former EPA Administrator Wheeler pulled some 11th-hour shenanigans, and we'll talk sustainability in the second half of the show.
Live from sunny central Iowa via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Jeff Cooper from the Renewable Fuels Association. Then it's on to Belinda Burrier from the United Soybean Board. In the final segment, Rodney Wilson, Senior Biomedical Communications Specialist from the American Red Cross. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much, and thank you for joining us today for another 2 hours of AgriTalk, man. Two hours. Two solid hours.
Just getting started.
That's right. So, President Biden did not, disappoint. I mean, he followed through with many of the things that he said that he was going to do in the first day, in his first hours of being president. There's a couple of things that I want to talk with Jeff Cooper about on that from RFA. Yes, because we got to get to the bottom line of these 2019 SREs that were issued by exiting EPA Administrator Wheeler. We'll try to get to the bottom line of that, and the timing of it all just seems so strange. But we'll get Jeff's take on it, and then we're going to talk about the sustainability of soybeans and whether or not consumers are willing to pay a little bit more for products that are produced with sustainably produced soybeans.
I like the question.
Yeah, whenever a consumer is willing to pay more for what might be considered a quote-unquote niche product, we got to pay attention to that. Got to pay attention. And then we're going on a blood drive, man, in the final segment of today's show.
Let's do it. Let's roll up our sleeves.
Month. Yeah, so let's get this done. Get her done. All right, man, let's get to the news. What you got?
Chip, President Joe Biden plans to propose a major immigration reform bill that would offer a path to citizenship for an estimated 11 million undocumented people and provide $4 billion in aid to El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. The estimated 1.25 million undocumented farm workers in the U.S. would immediately gain legal status under the immigration reform bill unveiled by Biden on Wednesday. While the measure is unlikely to pass the Senate without major concessions, the proposal is one of Biden's signature policies and marks a reversal from former President Donald Trump's policies. And I'm looking at those 1.25 million undocumented farm workers in the U.S., Chip.
Yeah. Obviously, that is where my attention went to as well on this. Number one, it's a lot of workers. Number two, would immediately gain legal status under the immigration reform bill. I wonder... That is an aggressive move, obviously. Boy, there's an understatement. That is an aggressive move, and I wonder if the Biden plan would be able to generate enough support out of the House and the Senate to pass. We'll discuss that, as we will definitely be talking about that tomorrow on the free-for-all.
Well, President Biden, as expected on Wednesday, signed an executive order to bring the U.S. back into the Paris Climate Accord, reversing the decision to withdraw by his predecessor, Donald Trump. Biden also signed an executive order revoking the permit granted by President Trump for the Keystone XL pipeline, a move which cited the 2015 review undertaken by the Obama administration, which also resulted in the permit being revoked. A couple of big ones there, too, Chip.
Well, you nailed the two that I want to ask Cooper about later coming up.
Excellent.
Here in just a bit. Yeah.
Very good. Well, the target of 100 million vaccinations against COVID-19 in the first 100 days of the Biden administration will be the metric that will measure success of the effort. That's according to White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain, who said, quote, ultimately, the goal is to wipe out the virus. How long or short that takes depends in some ways on the course of the virus and obviously the course to which people follow our leadership.
Yeah.
The Trump.
Honestly, that's basically, as I understand it, and I could be wrong, and I am willing to listen to the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But as I understand it, that's kind of the pace that we're on. That's kind of been the plan. Yeah.
A little bit.
And just set the bar low, right? Mm-hmm. Set the bar low.
Well, the Trump administration's action to declare that the Chinese treatment of Uyghur Muslim minorities in Xinjiang amounted to genocide prompted a harsh rebuke from China, with the country sanctioning 28 U.S. officials and accusing former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo of, quote, lying and cheating. Pompeo's expected successor under the Biden administration, Anthony Blinken, told lawmakers at his confirmation hearing Tuesday that he agrees with Pompeo's assessment, Chip.
Wow. Lying and cheating. It is just China's first attempt at bullying the Biden administration. There's going to be more.
Well, China's ag ministry today reported an outbreak of African swine fever in the southern province of Guangdong. The outbreak occurred at a farm with 1,015 pigs. The ministry indicated illegal transport of pigs was to blame. Still no vaccine for ASF. And finally, Church's Chicken, Checkers Drive-In, Noodles & Company, and TGI Fridays are among restaurant chains that are saying they're getting a sales bump from the latest round of stimulus money going to households. Huh. The first round of stimulus checks back in April helped boost major chains' sales by 3 to 12%, according to research. But weekly sales figures from several casual dining chains showed that improvement faded quickly. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. How you doing, Greg?
Good morning, Chip. I'm great. How are you?
Doing just fine. Just fine, man. So Davis just had this this news item about some of the chains that are seeing a bump from the stimulus money that's going out there. How is beef doing? Where's beef getting its cut of the retail dollar now?
Yeah, one of the things that we've seen, especially with the grocery stores seeing the huge bump, and then, you know, we talked last week, 110,000 restaurants are either closed long-term or forever. So loin prices are actually down a little bit overall. So that means those steaks that we're selling at restaurants, the demand is not there, so they're being sold at retail. That price has come down. On the flip side of that, we're seeing ground beef prices and rounds and chucks go up because that's more of those are being sold, again, at retail. The Department of Labor, Chip, just came out with their annual statistics. Food and beverage stores, they call them beverage stores, Chip. You and I would call them liquor stores.
Yep.
Those are up 12% in sales. So, you know, a lot of things that happened in 2020 obviously are carrying over into 2021, and that's going to have an impact on beef, especially if it takes a long time for these restaurants to get back open.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about roughly 20% of the restaurant food service establishments out there that are basically closed right now, Greg. My gosh, if we could get back even half of that in 2021, it would be a big boost for beef demand.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. We need to do what we can to support those restaurants and food services out there. Greg, it's always interesting, man. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chip.
You bet. Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Okay, like I said, we need to try to get to the bottom line of some of these 11th hour shenanigans by EPA Administrator Wheeler. We've got Jeff Cooper coming up next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
It's a good song for a sunny day in Iowa, isn't it, Davis?
Perfect. It's perfect.
Perfect.
Yes.
That's right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis.
Hello.
Let's get right to it. Let's bring in Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. Jeff, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Doing good, Chip. How are you this morning?
Not too bad, except, you know, You and I talk quite often, and it's usually because there's another fire that has started someplace, and we need to call out the department and try to put this thing out. So let me try to sum it up, what happened, and, okay. And fix me if I'm wrong. Fix me All if right. I'm wrong. So EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler, he's got 1 foot out the door at EPA, and he awarded waivers to two refiners to remove their blending obligations for 2019, and he awarded a waiver request for 2018 that was initially rejected. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair summary of what happened?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Okay.
So we had been hearing all last week that Andrew Wheeler, on his way out the door, might grant a bunch more of these pending refinery waivers. There were 66 pending at the agency. And so we got all the way through Friday, and none had been issued, so we thought maybe we'd dodged a bullet. Well, we were wrong. Tuesday evening, less than 24 hours away from the inauguration, he went ahead and dumped three more of these exemptions on us.
Okay. Observers would say, Jeff, come on, there were 66 pending. You only did three. What's the big deal?
Well, the big deal is that's another 260 million gallons of renewable fuel blending that is just erased. And it's like that'd be like shutting down three or four ethanol plants. It's like scratching 90 million bushels of corn demand off the balance sheet. It's also, there's the principle of the matter as well, Chip. I mean,
yes.
It's just ridiculous that, 12, 15 hours away from officially handing off to the Biden administration, EPA is still doing favors, for the oil refiners, with 1 foot all the way out the door.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about that after we get through some more of the details here, because the timing on the decision, obviously it's suspect, as we've said, either Wheeler was on his way out the door or had 1 foot out the door, however you want to say it. But on top of that, he had just, very recently had said, hey, let's wait until the Supreme Court hears the appeal of the 10th Circuit Court decision before we make any decisions on these 2019 waiver requests. Well, that hearing hasn't happened, and I don't even know if it's on the schedule yet, Jeff.
Well, it's likely to happen in April, but you're exactly right. I mean, that had been Wheeler's excuse for the entire year for not implementing the 10th Circuit Court decision, as he said, well, we got to let the appeals process fully play out. And when the Supreme Court decided that they want to review this thing, that is obviously part of the appeals process, and that won't be done until probably this summer. He was being a complete hypocrite by saying we got to let the appeals process play out. And then the day before leaving office, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, comes out and grants three more of these exemptions. Chip, I should point out that, we were ready for that. We sort of expected that he would do something.
Yep.
So about an hour or two after he granted those exemptions, we filed an emergency motion in the D.C. Circuit Court and asked for a stay, and basically asked the court to intervene and stop EPA from further processing these three exemption requests. And just this morning, just a few hours ago, we were notified by the court that they are going to stay those exemptions and prevent EPA from moving forward and prevent EPA from returning those 260 million RIN credits to these refiners. So it's great to see the courts putting the brakes on this thing, at least until the new EPA can get a little bit settled and take a look at this thing themselves.
Good. That's great news, Jeff. That is great news. You don't let up the pressure on this, though, do you?
No, absolutely not. And again, I think we wanted to send in that emergency motion on Tuesday evening to put up, call a timeout on this thing and put a halt to it, partly as a reason to, partly as a signal to the new incoming folks at EPA that, dang it, we're serious about this issue. This has got to stop. We're very hopeful that, and in fact, I'd say we're very confident
that the new EPA administrator, once he's confirmed, and the other new officials there at EPA are going to put an end to this nonsense that we've seen with these exemptions the past 4 years.
Okay, good, good. Let's go back to the Supreme Court and hearing an appeal of that 10th Circuit Court decision that basically led to the gap year waiver request that you've been having to deal with for the last year or so. Is there anything new on why the Supreme Court decided to go ahead and hear that?
There really isn't, Chip, and it's, we're still questioning and kind of curious about what in that decision led them to want to take a look at it. It was a unanimous decision out of the Tenth Circuit, so there was no disagreement, amongst the judges that heard the case in the Tenth Circuit. There was no split decision there. You know, it's not like there have been other circuit courts finding differently in this thing. So it is a bit curious. We're not sure exactly what prompted or piqued the Supreme Court's interest in this thing. But I think we'll find out here in the next few months. And like I said, we expect to finally have some closure on this thing by June or July.
Okay. I hope so. I hope so on that. All right. President Biden is here. He rejoined the Paris Accord. Does that have any impact on how the Renewable Fuels Association is going to approach the Biden administration?
Well, it does, and we fully expected that President Biden would, if not on day one, certainly within the first 30 days of his presidency, take steps to rejoin the Paris Accord. We know that's been a priority that he's talked about quite a lot on the campaign trail and as he waited to be sworn in. So not a big surprise there at all. What we want to do is remind President Biden and the advisors that he listens to on these issues that renewable fuels and especially the renewable fuel standard really must be part of the commitments that the U.S. will now make in regard to reducing greenhouse gas emissions as part of the Paris Agreement. Right. Every country that is part of that agreement, kind of signs on the dotted line and commits to reducing carbon emissions by a certain amount. And we think the RFS is a tool that is available here and now to help meet those commitments that we know the U.S. is going to make to reducing carbon emissions. So, unfortunately, for whatever reason, the Obama administration didn't really include the RFS as part of the, tools in the tool chest for meeting the Paris commitments. And we think the new Biden administration has a real opportunity to make sure that biofuels are part of it this time.
And other countries do. Other countries do see the low-carbon liquid fuel as a means of reaching the goals of the Paris Accord. I don't understand what is going on. The evidence that E10 cuts greenhouse gas emissions is stacking up. It's more convincing than ever.
Absolutely.
The evidence of how the higher blends brings even greater benefits is stacking up, is more convincing than ever. And the anti-ethanol crowd continues to tout outdated studies, and refiners keep getting permission. And I said this yesterday, by the way, refiners keep getting permission by way of these waivers to burn dirty fuel. How does that happen?
Well, it happens because of political connections, and I mean how the game is played. But you're absolutely right, and that's one of the things that we have been communicating to the Biden team is, look, if you want to slash greenhouse gas emissions on day one and really put some early points on the board, score some quick points with regard to your focus on climate, you should commit to fully implementing and adopting the RFS as Congress intended and reject these pending small refiner exemptions, and you would lock in 12 or 13 million metric tons of greenhouse gas reduction just by doing that, just by rejecting those pending refinery waivers. Because like you said, doing so will keep the dirtier fuels out of the marketplace, and it will ensure that we're burning cleaner, greener, renewable fuels in their place.
Jeff, let's stay in touch. We need to keep getting the word out on this. I didn't get a chance to ask you if the Keystone XL pipeline permit being pulled caught your attention or not. Real quick, is it an issue?
It certainly caught our attention, but not something that impacts our members all that much, but something to watch for sure.
Thank you, Jeff. That's Jeff Cooper, CEO of the RFA.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
And joining us now, ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, is it just a three-day downside correction in these grain markets?
Well, I guess we'll know at the end of the day today at the close. But for now, it appears that way, Chip. It's been a choppy day of trade through the overnight session and then through the morning here. Soybeans, corn, they're slightly favoring the upside at the moment. Soy oil, it's moderately to sharply higher right now, so trying to lead us to the upside there. The wheat market, it's under pressure, so, buyer interest has dried up in that market. But, like you said, the typical three-day corrective move, or is this something bigger to the downside? And like I said, it'll be answered by the close today, I guess.
Right. And absolutely positively have to wait for the close to figure out what the answer to that is. You know, it's kind of a strange day because we've got corn and feeder cattle moving in the same direction.
Yeah, a little bit of an abnormality here recently on that front, I guess. But the feeders, the front end of that market showing strength, like you mentioned. The back end, steady to weaker. So not broad-based buying by any means, but definitely through the summer month contracts. And live cattle, they're trading to the upside as well this morning, as are lean hog futures. And hogs shot sharply higher, have backed off quite a bit from the daily highs, but still trading to the upside.
Yeah, it's good to see that strength coming in there. What are you watching most closely this week now?
Well, we did see some daily export sales. Corn to unknown, beans to China, Mexico, and HRW wheat to Nigeria. So on the price break, we did see buyers come into the market. That's something important.
It very much so. Thank you, Brian. That's ProFarmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip, got Davis with me. And Davis, I'm kind of excited about this next conversation.
Yes, I
really
know you
am.
Are. Yes.
And here's why. Belinda Burrier, who is a farmer leader for the United Soybean Board, has been working on this for so long and has been, when you look at this pilot program that is coming about from the USB right now on soy sustainability and a new sustainability mark, label, I guess, that we would call it. I bet it's got Belinda really excited. Let's bring her in. Belinda Burrier, farmer leader for the USB. Belinda, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm doing well. I really appreciate this opportunity to speak on the new soy mark.
You bet. Belinda, first things first, tell us about your operation out there in Maryland.
My husband and I are farmers here in the mid-state of Maryland. We grow corn, wheat, soybeans, and a lot of hay. And we look forward to pressing on.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, the sustainability effort, Belinda, I know that you've been a proponent of it at USB for a long time. Why?
Well, we want the world, the U.S., everybody to know that farmers are growing their products sustainably. And part of the way that we are proving that we're doing this is USDA has these farm programs, and we jump through all these hoops doing all these programs, and we also grow our products in a sustainable way, including no-till farming, cover crops. We do nutrient management plans, to name a few.
Yeah. And so let's talk about this pilot program that is out there right now, because it's designed, or I shouldn't say it's designed, it will identify products and ingredients that are made with sustainably grown U.S. soy. What is this mark going to look like, Belinda?
This mark I'm excited about. I'm hoping to be able to use it on my farm sign. It shows crops on a curve, which also represents the United States flag. It has stars across the top. It has a barn and a silo representing the farmers. And this is a mark that we want people to recognize when they pick up a product and see that label on there. They know that that product has been sustainably sourced through the U.S. farmers.
Okay. So when we talk about being sourced from sustainable U.S. farmers, what's the criteria to get that designation?
Well, farmers to grow those sustainably sourced soybeans, they have to commit to conservation practices of the no-till, the responsible nutrient management. We're all grown in the United States. We're compliant with all U.S. environmental regulations. We protect our highly erodible soils and wetlands, and we have family farms and responsible labor practices.
Okay. So who is driving this effort? I shouldn't say who's driving the effort, Belinda. Where did the effort originate from? Did it originate on the farm, or did it originate with consumers?
It's a little bit of both, but the reason that the United Soybean Board is teaming up with Soylent and DuPont Nutrition Biosciences is that we wanted to run this pilot program January 19th through March 19th and see how it goes across with their whole consumer line and engage the soy value chain to make sure that we can get this product out there and they can see consumers and users can see that the soybean farmers are really behind this all the way.
Yeah. Belinda, when you talk about this program with other producers, what's their level of interest, of excitement around being part of this?
Their interest is that they are performing all of these different natural resource projects and programs. And so it's almost like getting rewarded for something that we've been doing for years, like 30 years or more.
Yeah.
And we're finally getting recognition for something that we've been doing. And it's exciting because it's like, okay, we can do this. No problem.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and because you've been doing it with no problem. And the best thing about this is the way things stand right now, Belinda, is it's still a voluntary effort. I mean, no farmer is being forced to participate in any of these conservation practices by way of mandates or anything like that. It's still voluntary. And when we see an effort like this that gets out in front of the consumer, That helps drive home the fact that, given the right opportunities, farmers will voluntarily do these sustainability efforts.
Exactly, exactly. We don't have any problem with doing any of this, and just the fact that it is voluntary, we're not getting paid for it. We're happy to do it. We want to sustain our farms into the future and for next generations.
Right, right. Belinda, is there any indication out there that consumers would choose a product with the sustainable soy mark on it or label on it over another product?
Honestly, I think that they would go for it, especially because it's U.S. grown products.
Yeah.
And I see the consumer turning. They want to source locally. They want to make sure that we are doing the right thing.
Right, right. You know, the doing the right thing is nice, And I know that farmers are interested in sustaining their own operations and improving their soil quality and their water quality and everything. But it would be nice if they could get just a little bit more for that product that they are also putting out there. Is that, do you think that's a possibility that the consumer might be willing to pay more for a product that has the sustainable soy mark on it?
That would be the ultimate thing to shoot for. The farmer needs all the help that they can get. And if the consumer is willing to pay a little extra, we're happy for that, because our input prices, everything keeps going up sky high. And actually, we haven't felt the reward of a lot of these increases. Thank goodness the market is working with us right now.
Yeah, no doubt about that. No doubt. Yeah, it would be nice if we could see it turn into it. So the products can carry the sustainable soy mark if they were grown in the United States, are compliant with all U.S. governmental regulations, protect highly erodible soils and wetlands, and were grown on a family farm with responsible labor practices. It's interesting to see the family farm and the responsible labor practices in there, because, Belinda, so often we're so focused on the conservation and the soil quality improvement, water quality, that sometimes we lose track of the responsible labor practices. It's got to be an important piece of the puzzle here, right?
That's correct. And it's fabulous that we can show off that we are actually family farms and have responsible labor practices. It's definitely a team effort amongst all the components that are going into this, and the fact that it's U.S. soy, sustainably sourced, you just can't get any better than that.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting, because it is soybean producers supporting this effort through the checkoff, right?
Correct. Yeah. And this is another way that we've created demand, and we want to continue doing that for the U.S. farmer.
Yeah, yeah. So how long have you been working with the USB, Belinda?
I've been on USB. This is my sixth year. I'm on the executive committee, and it's been a wild ride watching all of this kind of take place and form into a really great thing. I think the sustainable U.S. soy market is fabulous.
Cool. What would you say to somebody that's thinking about getting involved with USB?
Go for it. It's very exciting. It's fast paced. We get down to the nuts and bolts of everything. You can see your checkoff at work.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so cool. So cool. So big plans for 2021, Belinda, on your farm. I mean, got this soybean market, like you said, it's come back around, giving you an opportunity.
Yeah. We're looking at the Hyalic soybean, market this year, and the demand is huge. So we're growing 100% here at our farm, and
really
trying to promote that. Yeah. Promoting it here on the East Coast, it's the way to go. I think we have plenty of takers on it.
Yep. Hyalic, low linolenic, but that oil has so much potential to huge. Grab the consumer's attention, that consumer that's looking for kind of the ultimate healthy cooking oil. And
exactly.
What an opportunity. Good for you, Belinda. I love that. Hey, it was fun talking with you. Thank you so much.
I'd like to add, to learn more about sustainably grown U.S. soy, please visit sustainableussoymark.com. Thanks.
Excellent, Belinda. Thank you so much.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
All right, welcome back. I'm Chip Flory, got Davis Michelson with me.
Yes, sir.
And this is AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us today. Interesting effort underway to label the soy product or a product produced with soy as sustainable soy. The effort at the end of the pilot program to survey consumers and check how they respond to that mark on that product, I think is going to be really, really important for this whole effort going forward. If there's a great reaction to it, then all hands on deck. Let's get this rolling.
Right.
If there's kind of a meh reaction to it, and I hope we see some pricing tests at some point along the way. Is the consumer willing to spend even just a little bit more for that product that's carrying that mark? Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Hey, it's Blood Donors Month. Let's get Rodney Wilson in here. Have a conversation with Rodney. Rodney is the, let me get this right. He is the Senior Biomedical Comms Specialist for the American Red Cross. Rodney, welcome back to AgriTalk. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much.
You bet. You bet. Okay, let's get right to it. What's the need right now, Rodney?
Well, as you mentioned, January is National Blood Donor Month. So really, the reason why January is National Blood Donor Month is because it's more than any other month, we tend to see more challenges to ensuring a stable blood supply and making sure hospitals get the blood that they need. We often see severe weather with snow and ice. We haven't had a whole lot of that yet this year. Hopefully that trend holds out. And we also see high cold and flu symptoms, a lot of people being affected by just being under the weather and not able to donate. And so it just makes it a difficult month. And so right now, you know, the Red Cross needs donors of all types, not only just in January, but on an ongoing basis, especially given the pandemic adding more challenges for us.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's one of the boy, that has got to be a challenge because on one hand, Rodney, potential donors are hearing to stay home, stay away from people. And on the other hand, they're feeling the draw from people like you that are saying, listen, we need to get you in here and so that we can get our blood donations. What do you give a potential donor? What kind of information do they need to make them comfortable with the idea of coming in and donating blood?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think a lot of people, may be staying home more than they usually do, but it's important for people to know that blood donation is considered an essential community service. And that means it must continue regardless of what's happening, regardless of severe weather, regardless of pandemic or holidays. We must be able to keep collecting blood every single day so that medical treatments can happen and patients get the treatments that they need. When the pandemic started, the Red Cross already had this contingency plans for in the event that something like this would happen. And we were able to quickly implement safety measures at all blood drives. So we want people to know that it is safe to go to a Red Cross blood drive, and state and federal agencies actually encourage people to do that during this time. But what you'll see when you go to a blood drive, we are implemented social distancing at our blood drives. So blood donor beds and health history stations are further apart than you would usually see. We also check everyone's temperature before they enter. That includes our own staff and volunteers in addition to the donors. Everyone uses hand sanitizer throughout the process. We wipe down every donor touch point. Everyone wears masks. So, it's just important for people to know that a blood drive is a clean, safe, sterile environment in this time. And you shouldn't be worried about going to donate blood.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good. Yeah. The health of the donors has always been a major concern for Red Cross. But in the time of the pandemic, of course, all the efforts are being doubled down, tripled down, quad. Just do everything that we possibly can or you possibly can to make sure that these people are going to be safe. So January's Blood Donor Month, and there's a little extra incentive from Red Cross and the NFL, right?
Yeah. If you come to donate blood right now, we're partnering with the NFL. You can enter to win a couple of cool packages, basically prizes. You can enter to win tickets to the 2022 Super Bowl, or you can also enter to win a basically a watch at home package where you're going to get a new giant screen TV and some other goodies to have cool. like your own at home game watching party. So a great partnership with the NFL.
That's awesome. That's great stuff. So if I'm interested in donating blood, where do I go to figure out where I need to go?
So we have blood drives and many communities across the country, and the easiest way to find one for you, convenient for you, is to go to our website, redcrossblood.org, and you can type in your zip code. And from there, you can select the mile radius around your zip code. You can select a date range that you want to look at, and it will pull up all of the open blood drives and donation centers that might be near you. Then you just make an appointment and come and donate. And another great point about giving blood right now mm-hmm. is that we're testing all blood, platelet, and plasma donations for COVID-19 antibodies. So that means, that will help tell you if you may have come into contact with the virus and you didn't know about it.
Right.
You've come into contact with it. And if you have the antibodies, we can actually use that to help people who are currently critically ill with the virus in the
right.
hospital. So it's a win-win.
That's spectacular. Good to hear that, Rodney. Good stuff, man. Good luck to you, and we'll talk with you again soon.
Thank you so much.
You bet. That's Rodney Wilson, Senior Biomedical Comms Specialist for the American Red Cross. All right. Hey, thank you so much for joining us this morning. But that's just the first hour of today's AgriTalk. We go live at 2:06 this afternoon with Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions. And tomorrow morning, it's a free-for-all. Wiesmeyer Haney and American Farm Bureau Chief Economist John Newton right here on AgriTalk.